Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Sherry and Sade podcast. I am your host, Sherry and Sade. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you're having a wonderful Monday. I hope you had a great Cinco de Mayo, and I hope your weekend was on fire. Mine was. I got in a lot of rest. So that's always a great indicator of a great weekend. So today, I want to wish a very, very, very happy birthday to the one and only Prince Archie, the first child of Prince Harry and Meghan, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. Today, Prince Archie turns 5 years old, you guys. We will be paying homage to the young royal in today's episode as he celebrates his milestone birthday. However, that's not all we'll be getting into because, of course, Harry and Meghan supported the Free Press and we'll be talking about their announcement on their website. Carly Fortune speaks on working with the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, and Time Magazine made the decision and wrote a whole article about it that Queen Elizabeth II ruled for far too long. There's a lot to discuss and a lot of thoughts, and we're going to be getting into all that and more. So let's get into it. Once again, thank you so much for listening to the Sherry and Sade podcast. You guys, we hit 20,000 listeners. Holy guacamole. Thank y'all so much. It is so great to do this podcast. I'm not going to lie to y'all. I have been having way more fun doing the podcast than I did on YouTube. And no shade to either platform. Sometimes people just gel with a certain form of content creation. And while I always enjoyed YouTube a lot, I really did. It's just something about the freedom of the podcast and the tools they give me to use and just the platform support in general that has just made it so peaceful. There's this ease into the process and there's an ease into posting, and they just make everything so concise and easy. And the support team is really, really supportive. Whenever I've reached out to them, they've gotten back to me within 24 hours. They've helped me when things have gone wrong. And when they made an error, they let me know, like right away. It's just a different type of energy. And I'm starting to realize how restricted I was. And should I ever decide to split my content creation and put some of it back on YouTube, which it's very possible. I'll never say never. There will have to be changes made. So on, was it Friday? I believe it was Friday. I posted a video of teaching people how to find my podcast, because if you haven't ever listened to a podcast, which a lot of people haven't, you wouldn't know where to go. So I made a little video for YouTube for the first time in a long time, teaching people how to find me here. And it was fun to be back in that space of the live stream and all that kind of stuff, but it made me that much more excited for the 20,000 listeners over here to start participating in the live streams that we do over here, because we can also do live chat and we can do live phone calls. So it's very fun. It's a lot of freedom here. It's all the same access, so all the same live conversation that we had over on YouTube, but we don't really need moderators. If we need them, we'll have them, but we really don't need them, because everyone who finds me here actually wants to talk about Harry and Meghan in a positive light, which is not always the crowd that found us on YouTube. And so I'm welcoming all of those who found me because of that video. Welcome, come one, come all. And I can't wait to see this podcast continue to grow. So thank you all so much to everyone who has supported the growth of this platform. It's been wonderful. It really has. So like I said, we will be getting into our celebration, our happy birthday celebration for little Prince Archie. We're going to do one here on the podcast, and there's going to be a special birthday celebration for Prince Archie over on Patreon tomorrow. It'll be a day after, but that's just how it lined up. However, it is worth the wait. But we will be doing that at the end of today's episode as we work through all of the topics that we have at hand. And I want to get all the gunk out of the way before we get to the fun stuff. I want to end with a bang today. So first, the first thing we're actually going to talk about is something positive, and I'm really excited to talk about, which is the R12 Foundation recognizing World Press Freedom Day. And this was posted to r12.org, which you can also find from sussex.com. So the title of this post, which was under the update section of r12.org and sussex.com, is Supporting Free Press. The R12 Foundation recognizes World Press Freedom Day as the foundation works to promote information integrity and ethical journalism as a fundamental right. We are proud to support our partners at Free Press, an organization dedicated to giving people a voice in the crucial decisions that shape our media. Since its inception in 2003, Free Press has worked tirelessly to transform the media system, focusing on combating hate and disinformation, fighting for privacy and civil rights, and transforming local news. Free Press invites people to envision what a transformed media could look like and how technology could improve their lives, and they fight alongside them to make it happen. Through our work with Free Press and more, the R12 Foundation remains committed to supporting a trustworthy and diverse information environment. To learn more about Free Press, they have provided a link at the bottom of that post, so you can click the button that says click here. Now, as with every other episode, every article that I read or share is linked in the description box below underneath sources. So this is great. I really love, and I actually just talked about this on Wednesday. I love how all of the important matters that are included on the R12 platform and Harry and Meghan's platform of things that they advocate for, that they speak out against, and things that they want to propel into more success and to spread awareness of, I love that they don't just talk the talk, that they do a wonderful job of actually putting support and resources behind organizations who are in that same lane and are committed to that same fight. It's a way of making sure that we aren't just yelling into a void, and alongside spreading awareness, which is also integral to any kind of success. Alongside spreading awareness, they're actually utilizing resources to make sure the awareness piece is taken care of, but also supporting the work towards eradicating or promoting or whatever the desired end result will be of every issue. And this is another example of that, pointing people in the right direction to donate or to be more exposed to or to partake in World Press Freedom Day, and also promoting the free press movement. I think that's amazing. And it also contradicts that very common, I was about to say illegal, it is not illegal, but that very common false narrative of Harry and Meghan hating the media. They don't hate the media. They support responsible media. And those are two different things, because if you look, responsible media outlets also hate the tabloid media. So it's about being authentic. It's about doing things decently and in order, as Brother Foster would say. It's about doing things the right way and with integrity and with honesty and doing the right thing. That's what it's about, being honest. Are you being responsible? And I think it's important with their work exposing media that operates through nefarious means and has these under the table agreements and operates in a way that is harmful to the public as well as to individuals, and have caused people damage, have even resulted in some people passing away. And the fact that Harry and Meghan have been some of the leaders at the forefront of calling out that behavior in irresponsible media, I think it's important that they balance that out with supporting the free press movement and World Press Freedom Day and highlighting organizations that support media that operates in the way that it should. I just love that they are always very cognizant of having that balance, pointing us in the direction that we need to be aware of, but then showing us how we can advocate for that to happen and how we can advocate for this area, this platform, this industry, this issue, or whatever, to continue to improve. So good for them. I was excited to talk about this. This actually came out a couple of days ago, but I didn't have a podcast episode scheduled, so we didn't get to talk about it until now. But I'm really proud of them for this, and I will definitely be taking a gander at the Free Press website. Have you guys already checked it out? Have you donated? Have you been involved? Let me know if you've been involved. Let me know in the comment section. So that was a short and sweet topic, but next I actually wanted to talk about Carly Fortune. She recently did an interview with TorontoLife.com where she talked about working with Harry and Meghan. They did an interview. The title of the article that that the interview is in is called Body Language, B-A-W-D-Y, Body Language. It's linked below. And it was written by Arissa Valier. And it says, in just 2 years, she's published 2 runaway bestsellers, sold film rights to Prince Harry and Meghan, finished a third book, which hits shelves next month or this month, and is well into her 4th, How Carly Fortune is Reinventing the Bodice Ripper One Blockbuster at a Time. That's a lot. But you know what? I'm excited to read this article. So we have talked about her selling the film rights to her book to Harry and Meghan for Meet Me at the Lake. And we've assumed that it's going to be one of the projects produced through Netflix and Archwell Productions, but we don't have a whole lot of information on that just yet. So we will be getting there. So I decided to actually, I've read the whole article and it's good. The interview is really good, but I know my audience. So I'm actually going to just share the parts in which she mentions working with Harry and Meghan. But if you wish to read the entire article, feel free to check it out. It's the second source under sources titled Toronto Life, Body Language, and the link is there. But it says, despite being an unknown quantity, Fortune's first book cracked the New York Times bestseller list and stayed there for 13 weeks. Its wild popularity helped her second novel debut in the top spot, a feat that secured her a pair of royal fans with a book-worthy romance of their own in Prince Harry and Meghan, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, who partnered with Netflix to option the film rights. The author's latest twisty-turny beach read, This Summer Will Be Different, is a sun-kissed tale of lust, forbidden love, and enduring friendship set in Prince Edward Island and Toronto. On the eve of its release, Fortune weighs in on anti-romance snobbery, what makes a good sex scene, and how sudden fame has changed her life. So that's kind of the things that they're going to be talking about in this article, which is great. So if you want to get into that, feel free to check it out. It's linked below. So moving along to the question that they asked, Archwell Productions, run by Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, is producing Meet Me at the Lake for Netflix. Did that come as a shock? And this is what she said. I would sob uncontrollably watching one of my books come to life on screen. But that's not the reason I write. The rights to books get snapped up all the time. And in many cases, the books never make it to the screen. It's the nature of development and Hollywood. So I've taken the screen stuff as icing on the cake. Still, I have confidence in Archwell and Netflix, and I'm thrilled with how things are progressing. It's very exciting, which that's really cool. The next question was, what was it like speaking with royalty? She says, I had several meetings about selling the rights, including with the team at Netflix and with Meghan and producer Tracy Ryerson at Archwell. They're mostly relaxed, creative conversations, but they're also an opportunity to get a vibe read to figure out whether you have a shared vision and whether everyone likes each other. Meghan and Tracy are brilliant, and they understand exactly what I was trying to accomplish with this book. We gabbed for ages. In other words, we were creatively in sync. Then I had a lovely call with Meghan and Harry on the evening the deal closed. I can't play it cool. That was surreal. Which, oh. And it says, the next one was, any royal watchers in your life who are particularly jazzed when they found out? She says, I am bummed that my father's mother, Hazel, isn't still alive. Australians, like Canadians, are very into the royal family, and my grandmother would have been over the moon. She would have bragged to every single person she knew, which I thought that was so sweet. And what a great question. Moving along to the question that says, mainstream success means more readers, more money, more fame. What have been the most pinch me moments of the past couple of years? And her response was, there have been so many. Landing my dream agent, Taylor Haggerty, and hearing her tell me why she loved my writing. The moment I found out Every Summer After had hit the New York Times bestseller list, I was shopping on Queen West with a friend and I freaked out on the sidewalk. And she said, yes, joining a Zoom meeting with Meghan Markle. One of the best moments was meeting Taylor and my editor, Amanda Amanda Bergeron in real life. They're based in Los Angeles and New York respectively. And the three of us didn't get together in person until last summer. These two women changed my life and hugging them meant the world. So, so sweet. She had a lot of really great tidbits. I highly recommend reading the entire thing, but it was great to hear that one, Meet Me at the Lake is moving along nicely. And two, she's still continuing to write. So that means we might have an opportunity for more projects after Meet Me at the Lake. Look at me. We haven't even gotten Meet Me at the Lake yet. And I'm already like sequel, sequel, and more sequels. But I love the way that she described working with Netflix and Archwell Productions and how heavily involved Harry and Meghan were. They're not just throwing out these ideas and leaving it to their team to figure out. This is why all of their projects, all of their work is so seamlessly done. It's because they're part of the process from beginning to end. So thank you so much to Carly Fortune, which she's about to be worth a fortune with all this work she's doing. But thanks to Carly Fortune for giving us an insight into what that process was like. And I am so excited to see whatever comes out of Meet Me at the Lake. Now, I had gotten a request last year when news first broke of Archwell Productions acquiring the rights, the film rights to Meet Me at the Lake. And someone said, can you read the book and recap it? And then when the movie comes out or whatever the project is, maybe do a comparison and analysis, which is something I kind of started doing with Lifetime movies that were about royal family, about the royal family. And we all had a good time with that. We used to call it Royal Reviews. That's what it was. And so that came up again, and I just wanted to gauge what your thoughts were. If you guys would like for me to do that, I am more than happy to. But this might be more of a Patreon thing. So y'all let me know if y'all would prefer it's on a podcast. I am always happy to adjust. But anyway, good for Carly Fortune, and I am excited to watch Meet Me at the Lake as well as whatever other projects come out. So we got the fun stuff out of the way. I have to talk about this Time Magazine article. Have you guys heard of it? It's titled Queen Elizabeth II Ruled Too Long. Now, when I saw this, I thought it was a little crass because now if we had left this up to the rest of the royal family to publicize this, we would have never found out about it because none of the royal family members showed up. But a new statue of Queen Elizabeth was unveiled recently and no senior royal showed up. I just thought, what a shame. How pitiful and disgusting and pathetic of them to not show up to that. Oh, I just felt so bad. That was somebody who dedicated her entire life to not only her country, but her family and their legacy. And had it not been for her, none of them would have anything right now. And so it's a little surprising that none of them showed up for her. Despite invoking her memory to always attack Harry and Meghan, one thing I will say is Harry and Meghan are always so respectful of Queen Elizabeth II and her memory and her legacy, and they have said nothing but glowing, beautiful, positive things about her and showed her legacy and her memory so much respect. And it's so shocking to see how the rest of the royals who are still over there are treating her memory and her legacy. I just could not believe they did not show up, y'all. I was shocked. So to see this article titled Queen Elizabeth Ruled Too Long and to use a picture of the statue, it's kind of like a double punch in the gut. It's like, wow, do y'all have no respect? Not just because she was queen, but this is a human being who lived, who is now deceased. Like, they don't even respect the dead. As you can see, I'm already giving my opinion before we read the article, but those are my first impressions. And so I decided not to read the article until I could read it live on camera, that way, or on camera on my podcast. That way my reactions were more authentic. So it's a quick article. I'm going to read it and I'm going to give my thoughts because something tells me based on my first impression, I'm going to have thoughts. I can tell just based on the topic, I'm going to have thoughts. So let's get into it. So the writer of this article is Alexander Larman. And it says, as much of Britain and the world waits on bated breath over King Charles's cancer treatment, it is only natural that many look back to his mother's time on the throne with a mixture of nostalgia and regret. It was Queen Elizabeth II's unchanging nature, epitomized by her unbending adherence to the royals' unofficial motto of never complain, never explain, that made her a constant fixture in the lives of millions of Brits and billions more around the globe. When she died in 2022, nobody under the age of 70 had known another British monarch. A few younger than her son could remember George VI, let alone the ill-fated Edward VIII or George V. For all intents and purposes, Elizabeth II was the British monarchy. But her reign, longer than any other British monarch in history, has set the stage for much of the predicament the royal family finds itself in today. Sorry, let me not. I'm going to keep reading. I'm going to give my opinion at the end. Take a deep breath. Give the opinion at the end. Ooh, is Alexander Larman not tugging at my cap right now? Because I have a lot of thoughts. Let me just read. This is why I need a co-host, because I don't stay on topic, but let's keep going. Queen Elizabeth II has for years been by far the most popular British royal, a fact that remains true even now, and it's going to be that. There are good reasons for this. She served as an unmistakable bridge between the last days of the British Empire, which she was born into, and today's era of instant technology. When she became queen, communication by telegram was common. When she died, the telegram app was an equally frequent usage. It is hard, if not impossible, to think of any comparable figure who exerted such influence, however symbolic it was, over such a period of immense transformation. Outside of Britain, the Queen played a central role in building the soft power of the country throughout the second half of the 20th century. When, after the post-war years of austerity and misery, the country established itself once again in the 1960s as a world power to be reckoned with, thanks to the dual strengths of the canny Prime Minister Harold Wilson and the telegenic young Queen. Wilson's virtues were political, Elizabeth's those of being able to temper regality with apparent accessibility. The late Queen undoubtedly had her flaws. She was not a woman of any artistic or intellectual interests, unlike her unfairly maligned husband, and was happiest when spending time with her corgis. She could be a poor judge of character. Her open preference for her second son, the now disgraced Prince Andrew, and continued loyalty to him was a testament to that. And she could be slow at reading the public mood, too. She notoriously took days to publicly address the death of Princess Diana in 1997. She was, by all accounts, reluctant to do so even then, feeling that she had been bounced into doing so by the then Prime Minister Tony Blair. And she could justly be criticized for sticking to conservatism rather than considering the idea of progress when it came to the monarchy. By the end of her reign, it was still recognizably the same institution, battered and shop-soiled but intact, that she had inherited, much to her shock and surprise, while in Kenya on February 6, 1952. Yet the Queen's greatest flaw was one that she had no control over, and that was that she set an impossibly high expectation of what monarchy should be that her successors could never hope to live up to. Queen Victoria did much the same, dying in 1901 after nearly 64 years on the throne and allowing four subsequent monarchs to flounder in her wake. From her son Edward Dirty Birdie VII to George VI, only Queen Elizabeth II was able, half a century later, to wipe away memories of her great-great-grandmother's reign by doing as little as she could to upset the monarchical apple cart. She never exercised a single meaningful veto throughout her reign. There was much sentimental talk, especially late on, about the new Elizabethan age, but what her reign more closely resembled was a second Victorian age, even as British expansionism and concomitant exceptionalism was replaced by a slow, managed decline into a middling power. None of this was the late Queen's fault. She did everything that could be expected from her, sometimes even more. So many hands shaken, so many ribbons cut, so many have you come far inquiries. She, or at least those around her, had an undeniable knack for finding the appropriate phrase on public occasions. Her dismissal of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex's accusations of royal racism after their Oprah interview with Recollections May Vary appeared to end any serious threat to the monarchy. Her promise during COVID-19 that we will meet again comforted many at a time when hysteria and uncertainty dominated. She may or may not have enjoyed her portrayal in The Crown as an ingenuine turned battle axe. But one thing that her lifelong belief in duty would never have allowed was to quit. Recollections of those dread days in the late 1936 never disappeared when her uncle Edward VIII, later Duke of Windsor, abdicated the throne to marry the twice divorced Wallis Simpson, passing the crown over to her father. Her decision to remain queen until the last possible moment, frail but still shaking hands with the disastrous Prime Minister Liz Truss, was personally commendable, but has left Charles III with the impossible task of inheriting a legacy too large for anyone to bear. It's interesting to wonder what would have happened had King Charles III inherited the throne years or decades earlier. A younger Charles would perhaps have been a more energetic, at times even interventionist, monarch. Instead, Charles assumed the throne at 73 and will likely be remembered by posterity as a warm-up man in reverse, whether he reigns for 2 years or 20 more. The world, or at least the parts of the world that still care about the British monarchy, may be forced to look at the 41-year-old Prince William to revitalize the institution whenever he takes over. Yet, a man who has no interest in the religious faith, that he will be the defender of, who has been beset with scurrilous rumors, including adultery, and whose attitude toward the Commonwealth seems to be that it's best wound up without delay, is hardly the steady and dutiful custodian of the throne that his grandmother was. Shakespeare's Henry IV once described the crown as troublesome and said that it seemed in me, but as an honor snatched with boisterous hand. Elizabeth II dealt with the honor in rather more sober fashion and succeeded, but she left an impossible inheritance in the process. And that surely is her lasting legacy, setting a standard that nobody else could live up to. I have thoughts, but after the break. First, I want to say, I am fully aware that Queen Elizabeth II was not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. What I will say is that she had a lot of faults, many of which were not shared in this article. The things that actually mattered, particularly her treatment of those in the Commonwealth and her response to requests to return stolen items, has always been the thing that made me not be a full-on Elizabeth supporter. She doesn't need my support, but I'm just saying. So there's that. So I'm not by any stretch of the imagination saying that woman was perfect, because no one was. And there was a lot more that she could have done, a lot more that she could have accomplished, and a lot more power that she could have exerted to create a more progressive and accepting world, particularly in her country, but in her Commonwealth. There was a lot more that she could have done. That has been established. No one's perfect. Neither is she. And she is not absolved from criticism. Everyone should be able to have criticism. But I'll say this. After mentioning the things in this article and the end result being it's her fault for being so committed and being so, quote, successful and staying on the throne too long and being that dedicated, it's her fault that her empire or her monarchy will never live up to that. And none of the future monarchs will live up to her memory in the same way that her great-great-grandmother had that same problem. It wasn't until basically Queen Elizabeth II picked up the baton from Queen Victoria. And essentially, it won't be until Queen Elizabeth's grandchildren or great-grandchildren take the throne that things will recover and get back to where they were. And I think that's utter bullshit. While the historical facts are there, and that makes sense, and a number of the examples that they use to show that Charles could not live up to Queen Elizabeth are there, and that makes sense, and I see how they got to that place, I think they stopped just short of the real issue, which is often what happens. I don't think people should be regarded as unfair or seen as making a mistake for being overly dedicated and overly successful and overly committed. That's bullshit. That is absolute bullshit. If I build an empire, if I do all I can to set my family, myself, and anyone who depends on us up for success, long-term and short-term, and I commit my life to it, like Queen Elizabeth told us that she would, then it's my child or my successor's job to pick up the baton and carry it as far as they can go in the best way that they can. And that's really all you can commit to. And then once they have reached their point where the sun sets on them and it'll rise with someone else as the new king or queen, shout out to Mufasa, greatly worded, then it's their job to carry it even further and do the same thing. There will be highs and lows in every single reign. But I can assure you, Queen Elizabeth's commitment is not the problem here. Now, what I would say is the problem is overly spoiled successors with no real motivation and no real world experience. 100% the issue. They, in the way that Princess Diana displayed a connection with people, and she united people, and she made people feel seen and supported and loved and committed themselves to the monarchy because of her, because they knew they were seen and regarded and loved. She lost that aspect. There was no one there to pick up the baton who had that empathetic, humanized chip. Everyone left is a self-serving, spoiled, greedy, rich brat. And when she found that empathetic chip again in Harry and Meghan, the rest of the spoiled, greedy, entitled assholes ran them out. And I would say one of her mistakes was not intervening and allowing that. But here's the thing. That wasn't even really her mistake, because by the time it got as bad as it did, there was only so much she could do.
My grandmother was the first senior member of the family that Meghan met. She had no idea what it all consisted of. So it was a bit of a shock to the system for her.
I mean, it's surreal. There wasn't like some big moment of like, and now you're gonna meet my grandmother. I didn't know I was gonna meet her until moments before. We were in the car and we were going to Royal Lodge for lunch. And he's like, oh, my grandmother's here. She's gonna be there after church. And I remember in the car and driving up, and he said, you know how to curtsy, right? And I just thought it was a joke.
But how do you explain that to people? How do you explain that you bow to your grandmother and that you will need to curtsy, especially to an American? Like, that's weird.
Now I'm starting to realize this is a big deal. I mean, Americans will understand this. We have medieval times, dinner and tournament. It was like that. Like, I curtsied as though I was like... Pleasure to meet you, Your Majesty. Like, was that okay? It was so intense. And then when she left, Eugenie and Jack and Fergie say, you did great. Thanks. I didn't know what I was doing.
Tonight, there is a new royal scandal. The wife of one of the Queen's cousins, Princess Michael of Kent, wore what's called a blackamoor brooch to the Queen's annual Christmas lunch. The jewelry is widely viewed as racist, and the decision to wear it quickly drew criticism on social media.
The British monarchy is different from the other monarchies in Western Europe in being an international monarchy, with the Queen being head of state of over a dozen other countries around the world.
On my 21st birthday, I am 6,000 miles from the country where I was born. But I am certainly not 6,000 miles from home.
At the center of the argument for the monarchy in this country is the Commonwealth. The Queen made it her life mission to fight for this institution. She's famous for it. She's deeply respected for having kept this institution together.
I am before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to the service of our great imperial family to which we all belong.
And the palace signed off on us moving to South Africa. So my father's office knew about it, my brother's office knew about it, and my grandmother's office knew about it. No one else knew. It was very much an internal document. Then it was leaked to the Times newspaper. Okay, Canada. I was speaking to my father. This is the plan. And he says, can you put that in writing? And I said, I'd rather not because of what happened last time. He says, I can't do anything unless you put it in writing. So I put it in writing, sent him emails on the 1st and the 2nd and the 3rd of January. And in one of those, I'd mentioned that, you know, if this wasn't going to work out, then we would be willing to relinquish our Sussex titles if need be. So that was...
That's the plan.
That was the plan. Mm-hmm. Before we left, spoke to my grandmother as well and told her that we're coming back on the 6th and I would love to come and drive up and come and see you. She knew that we were finding things hard. I'd spoken to her many times about it. She told me that she had no plans for the week. And she said, well, why don't you come up and intend to have tea, but why don't you stay the night, you and Meghan?
So we were flying back from Vancouver straight to Heathrow. And so right as we're getting on the plane, this urgent message comes through to H saying, you are not allowed to go and see Her Majesty. Make sure that your principal is aware. He cannot go and see her. She's busy. She has plans all week.
I was like, well, that's certainly the opposite to what she had told me. Once we were back in the UK, I rang her and I said, I'm now told that you're busy. She goes, yes, I didn't know that I was busy. I've been told that I'm busy. I've actually been told that I'm busy all week. I was like, wow. I went in with the same proposal that we'd already, you know, made publicly. But once I got there, I was given 5 options. 1 being all in, no change. 5 being all out. I chose option 3 in the meeting, half in, half out. Have our own jobs, but also work in support of the Queen. But it became very clear very quickly that that goal was not up for discussion or debate. It was terrifying to have my brother scream and shout at me and my father say things that just simply weren't true, and my grandmother, you know, quietly sit there and sort of take it all in. But you have to understand that from the family's perspective, especially from hers, there are ways of doing things, and her ultimate sort of mission, goal, slash responsibility is the institution. People around her are telling her, by the way, that proposal or these two doing X, Y, Z is going to be seen as an attack on the institution. Then she's going to go on the advice that she's given. It was really hard. The meeting finished without any right solidified action plan.
When all of this started, I had no children. And now I have birthed 2 and lost 1, and it's still going on.
When we were just about to go to the Court of Appeal, a senior member of the Duke of Cambridge's team came forward to give this witness statement, which wasn't required. And sadly, there's just no way he could have done that without the authority of his bosses.
Mail on Sunday was arguing all the way through this that actually this letter wasn't private because she shared a draft with her former press secretary and she shared some text messages with him.
Like, how on earth? Like,
he works for his mother. Like,
it's your brother. I'm not going to say anything about your brother, but it's so obvious. It's like,
it's even more obvious that they will try and cover that. Again, Jason, the former aide of Meghan and Harry, as opposed to...
That's what I keep saying. I'm like, why are we talking about him as her former aide and not as the person who works for your brother?
That's why I'm now living in a different country. Because all the comms teams basically, like, try to outdo each other. But this is the contract, the symbiotic relationship between the two institutions working the best that it can.
And so I shared that to say this. There were plenty of mistakes made when it comes to how Queen Elizabeth approached her duty and that balance that she struck in supporting her family, as well as being on the cusp of progression, especially when it comes to her own family. None of that was mentioned in this article outside of contesting the statements made in Harry and Meghan's interview with Oprah. But the, quote, recollections may vary have widely been actually accredited to Kate Middleton. But again, still with the Queen's support, or else it wouldn't have been included. And I think it's important that in the Harry and Meghan docuseries, which excerpts I just shared with you, they noted that Prince William's involvement on the opposing side of Meghan's lawsuit against the press's violation of her rights and copyright infringement could only have been done if he had had approval, which would have had to have come from the Queen. And so if there were mistakes that were made, it was not finding a better balance and maybe zooming out to look at what the message could have been that was being sent through her support of Prince Andrew, through her support of the royals who antagonized Harry and Meghan and the lack of intervention, and through her support of William as he decided to combat his brother and sister-in-law in court on behalf of the press. So I think there were mistakes made. I don't think it's that she stood her ground as the monarch for as long as she did. I don't think it's that she stayed on the throne. I don't think it's that she worked as hard as she did. I think it's that she did not better prepare her successors to uphold the institution. I resent the message that, oh, if you work too hard, it's your fault if your successors fail. That's ridiculous. You set the bar high and that's where you strive. And you never stop looking for the next thing. You never stop trying to achieve. You never stop upholding your legacy while creating anew. That's what it's all about. My grandfather is an extremely accomplished man. I would be here all day if I wanted to talk about what my grandfather, the Reverend John Brooks, has done and what he still does and the legacy he upholds. And I think about that often when I'm going about my day. He is a very consistent person in a lot of ways that I always look to him with admiration, but also for breadcrumbs to kind of like, how can you help me be a better me in this area? And he has so many accomplishments. That doesn't mean if me or any of his other grandchildren fail, it's his fault for setting the bar high. That's ridiculous. That's what you're supposed to do. I think where Queen Elizabeth may have had more success is if she had better prepared her successors. If she had a better relationship or established a more balanced relationship between her family as they were public facing royals versus who they were behind closed doors, and their relationship to the firm, and made better decisions as to how the firm actually worked to support the royals. Because the deeper you look into their relationship, it starts to look less like the firm supports the monarchy and the monarch and the royals and the institution. And it starts to look like the firm pimps out the royals. It starts to look less like this entity exists to support this family, and this family exists to establish and support and create longevity and success for this monarchy, and all of it is one institution. And it starts to look more like they're enslaved to the firm. The deeper you dig and the more layers you pull back, you start to wonder, so with this firm business, who's at the top of that? And on that side, and how are decisions being made, and who are the comms teams really working for? Because when you start to hear it, yes, they work for their principal, but do they? And it's all kind of intertwined. And I'll be honest, it's intentionally ambiguous. The most powerful person in the room is often not in the room themselves. Their people are in the room. Their eyes and ears are actually in the room, but they are not. And you don't know who they are. And that's how they maintain their power. And that feels a lot like what's going on here. And so, like I said, I don't like that. It's almost like Queen Elizabeth's legacy is being penalized for being great, not flawless, but great, being something to strive for. I think the problem is that her successors were ill-prepared, and that on a personal level, she did not live up to her professional level and her professional side, where as her dutiful, I should say dutiful, because professional just sounds kind of minimal considering we're talking about royalty, but her dutiful side was at 100%, whereas her personal side and the balance that needed to be struck is more like 20. And sacrifices have to be made, and I get that. And she was more than well aware of that. But I don't like the idea that she struck a chord too high for her kids and her successors. I think that's really silly. It's like, oh, lower the bar. Give us less so that long term we can have less. No, set the bar high, but prepare. Prepare those coming after you. And I think the loss of Harry and Meghan was the loss of a substantial future that the monarchy could have held. I do. I think losing Harry and Meghan, the progress that could have been made with the institution and the longevity that could have been had from it was out the window. The loss of Queen Elizabeth was the loss of the legacy. And we're seeing the remnants of that, almost like a carcass of what could have been a very strong, powerful entity. And now it's a slimmed down carcass where all the meat has been gone. That's nothing to look forward to. But I think the person you need to look at when it comes to why Charles isn't successful is Charles himself. You cannot blame Queen Elizabeth. In some ways, you can say she could have intervened and had a lot more of a clear stance on Charles's first relationship and how maybe the royal family's intermingling with his first relationship was the demise. It set it up for failure from the very beginning because he didn't marry the person he wanted to marry. And instead of communicating that, he spent his entire marriage trying to make Diana sorry for being, in his mind, the figurehead of his misery, instead of confronting the person who really made that the issue, which wasn't Diana. Diana came and did what she was supposed to do, and she was actually in love with him. If you read Diana, her true story, in her own words, you will hear Diana actually was in love with Charles, and she held a great deal of respect for him, and she was ready to do the job. And he spent their entire marriage torturing her for that, because she wasn't who he wanted, as opposed to being upset at the institution that decided who he would marry for him, or heavily encouraged him to marry Diana over others. I think you need to look at Charles for his inadequacy. Because by that same token, you could also say, well, then if that's the case, if we're going to blame Elizabeth for Charles's lack of ambition and potential longevity and influence and impact, then we should expect that his sons have even less impact or influence or success. And that couldn't be further from the truth. While William is a damn dud, and I mean that literally and figuratively, because he is a milk dud from the neck up, and he's a dud when it comes to the world. Nobody respects him. He's known as a bully and a possible adulterer. He's made very shocking comments about race and particularly Africa. And he's made even more shocking moves when it comes to his biracial sister. Sister-in-law. But so he's a dud in both the world and his success and as an heir and as far as a person. But then Harry is very successful. Harry is successful in everything he's tried in the business world and philanthropy as a royal. He's actually very successful. So and that's in large part thanks to his mother, but also himself. We have to credit him. He worked very hard to build himself up in all of these spaces. And if you read Spare, which I highly recommend, you will hear that journey and you will hear how hard he worked and how hard Meghan has worked to both become fully idealized people who came together to create an amazing dynamic duo and to have the success that they have today. And we're really only at the beginning of that. So we can't blame the parents. We can understand where better things could have happened, where more steps could have been taken, a better approach could have been taken, more preparation could have been provided. There is always something that could have been better. And one of the things that I love about great parents is that they look back and they can acknowledge, like, yeah, I could have done better with that. Wow, I'm so far from that person now. And I'm so glad I'm doing better now. And I wish I had done more then. But that's with anybody. People who consistently, self-aware people who are honest, typically do better in life because they're able to correct as they go and take criticism and take feedback and apply and soul search, just like Harry does. And I think Diana set him up for success with that. But if we are just going to blame the parents for the success or failure of the kids, then none of the royals should be successful. So why is Harry the anomaly? Right? So you can't blame Queen Elizabeth for Charles's weak ass reign, let's call it what it is. And that has nothing to do with his illness. That has everything to do with his lack of preparation for it. Waiting in the wings does not mean he was waiting there preparing. He has been self-indulgent since the beginning. His reign is the results of a life of self-indulgence, lack of limitations, self-indulgence, and a woe is me attitude. And this is what you get. Because let me just say this, Queen Elizabeth's father had a short reign. And we went through the history of all that, but people still respected him and respected his memory. And Queen Elizabeth always made sure to respect his memory, very much so. We don't see Charles respecting Queen Elizabeth's memory in that same way, because why wasn't he at the unveiling? Just like this article pointed out that even when Queen Elizabeth was sick, down to the last few days, she was still shaking hands and doing her job. Although he is sick and cancer is no joke, so this is not in reference to the cancer, Charles has not shown that he is committed to the work, nor have his successors. And the two people who were, they made sport out of mistreating. I think if there were mistakes made in Queen Elizabeth's reign and Charles's reign, it's that more wasn't done to support their family, which sent a very clear message to their commonwealth. and also to the rest of the world. And the lack of respect they have now is a direct result of that, as well as many, many, many other things. I mean, we could get started with the looting and go from there. So said all that to say, give everybody their things back. Stop abusing Meghan. Get out of bed with the press and get your asses to work. Stop blaming a dead woman. I feel like every other week they decide who their target is, and it's always a target who can't fight back. When they're not bullying Meghan, who doesn't give a damn about them anyways, she does not care. But when they're not trying to bully Meghan from afar, yelling at a brick wall, screaming across an ocean, insults that she'll never hear nor care about, they decide to make sport out of abusing the legacy of Princess Diana and Queen Elizabeth. The most notable monarch to ever exist in Britain's history, and they make sport out of tarnishing her legacy. Like I said, the issue was never her. It's the successors and their greed and their lack of dedication. I think instead of asking Queen Elizabeth to have less dedication to her country, I would ask the successors who are still alive and young to have more and to stop abusing Harry and Meghan. But there's that. So anyway, those are my thoughts on that article. I told y'all I had a lot of thoughts. They got on my nerves. They absolutely got on my nerves. Now, before we get to today's celebration, I wanted to take a second to acknowledge, y'all know that I am a Fisher House groundbreaker, meaning I do minimum of two live streams a year where we donate and we raise funds and donate them to Fisher House Foundation. It's a foundation that supports the military by providing housing, transportation, food, and community to military service members and their family when they are hospitalized. And so it's this amazing organization. They are linked in the description box below under sources. But they posted a couple of days ago that May is dedicated to honoring the incredible individuals who selflessly care for military heroes. And it's the month of military caregivers. So they actually had an announcement from the chairman and CEO of Fisher House Foundation, Ken Fisher. And I wanted to share that with you today, especially since I'm a groundbreaker. So I'm going to share that now.
Caregivers. They play such a critical role in the healing of our injured, ill, and wounded service members and veterans. We need to celebrate the spouses, siblings, parents, children, friends, and so many others who make sacrifices too. Caregivers are the hidden heroes, and Fisher House Foundation stands ready to support them. Caregivers. They play such a critical role in...
Thank you so much to Ken Fisher for that amazing message. Thank you so much to Fisher House Foundation for all the amazing work that you do supporting military service members as well as their families. But most of all, thank you so much to the service members and their families and caregivers for protecting our freedoms. So now, you guys, it is time for a little celebration of the one and only Prince Archie. Today is his 5th birthday. I'm so excited to celebrate his birthday. If you have not checked out my videos in the past of celebrating and marking his birthdays, feel free. They are still up on my YouTube. I think I only have like 10 videos still visible, and it's Prince Archie's birthday videos are also part of that number. So feel free to go back and check it out. But I want to start off also our celebration with this video.
X marks the spot.
Lobby horse in the background.
Nice.
It's all ready, right? Prince Harry, have you anything you want to share with us, the world?
Yes, I'm very excited to announce that Meghan and myself had a baby boy early this morning, a very healthy boy. Mother and baby are doing incredibly well. It's been the most amazing experience I could ever possibly imagine. How any woman does what they do is beyond comprehension, but we're both absolutely thrilled and so grateful to all the love and support for everybody out there, from everybody out there. It's been amazing. So we just wanted to share this with everybody.
And what about names? You still thinking about names?
Still thinking about names, Alan. It's the baby's a little bit overdue. So we've had a little bit of time to think about it, but yeah, we're still, that's the next bit. But for us, I think we'll be seeing you guys in probably 2 days time as planned, as a family, to be able to share it with you guys and so everyone can see the baby.
Well, you can't stop smiling. It must have been, I mean, I suppose every birth is amazing, but for your own child, it must be.
I haven't been at many births. this is definitely my first birth, but it was amazing. Absolutely incredible. And as I said, I'm so incredibly proud of my wife. And as every father and parent would ever say, you know, your baby is absolutely amazing, but this little thing is absolutely to die for. So I'm just over the moon. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
You can hear it in the video, but he also turned around and thanked the horses because they shot this in front of the stables. And that's always one of my favorite parts. But I wanted to read this article that was published today, written by Stephanie Pettit and published to People magazine, titled "How Meghan Markle and Prince Harry Are Celebrating Son Prince Archie's Fifth Birthday." Now, I don't know how they would know this. So I'm just going to read it and I'm giving my thoughts. Meghan and Harry have a 5-year-old son. Prince Archie turned 5 on May 6th, and People understands the family is celebrating his birthday privately before the Duke and Duchess of Sussex's upcoming travel plans. Prince Harry is heading to the UK this week for celebrations surrounding the 10th anniversary of the Invictus Games, and Meghan is set to reunite with her husband later in the week for a visit to Nigeria, also spotlighting the sporting competition for veterans and service personnel. Archie's fifth birthday coincides with the first anniversary of his grandfather King Charles's coronation. No, it doesn't coincide. Y'all know this really ticked me off. Another example of Charles being a piece of shit is King Charles planned, out of all the days in the year, he had about 365 of them to pick from. He chose his grandson's birthday to try and upstage a baby. And you wonder why people are looking at you like a weakling. Anyway, and you trying to blame Queen Elizabeth's reign for his failure. No, he's a bully and a coward and a bully in the same body. No wonder he's always conflicted. Anyway, sorry, y'all. This is why I need a co-host. If you want to be my co-host, let me know. HelloSharing@gmail.com. I might be interviewing co-hosts because I do not stay on topic, y'all. All right, let's continue. Prince Harry attended his father's crowning ceremony last year, heading to the airport shortly after the event to fly back to California for his son's birthday festivities. Y'all remember he had that hanger? Meghan missed the coronation, staying in the U.S., where they moved in 2020. I'm not going to read all that, blah, blah, blah. A source told People ahead of Archie's fourth birthday last year that a low-key party was planned at the family's home. They'll have friends around them and Meghan's mom, Doria Ragland, and Meghan will definitely have support that weekend. Little sister Lilibet was also set to be part of the festivities. They are so sweet together. Archie loves Lily. He's such a sweet boy. When she's not around, he asks, "Where's Lily?" The source added. That is adorable. So I hope they enjoy the birthday celebration. I'm sure it'll be amazing. But also getting in on the fun of celebrating little Prince Archie was Hello Magazine. Now, y'all know I have tussled with Hello Magazine a time or two, but it seems like they got on the good foot with this one post. They did this one good thing, and they posted an article titled "Prince Archie at 5, His Luxury Life in Montecito, Charity Visits with Mom Meghan, and Starting School." Now, as far as the luxury life, I'm kind of defensive when it comes to how they describe Harry and Meghan's lifestyle and living situation, because there's always an implication that they overspend or that they're gratuitous in some way. And I resent that because, one, none of us know what they spend, how much they spend, what they get for free, what they made, we don't know their personal business, and we don't need to know, because us knowing their personal business doesn't help them do what they do any better. They're still going to help people. They're still going to work. They're still going to do their thing. As long as they're not calling me, asking me for $7 to pay for any kind of subscription, then I'm fine. As long as Meghan and Harry are not hitting me up like, "Hey, can you cover my Netflix subscription? I got you next month." Like, then we're good. I don't care what they're spending, but it's worth noting, if y'all do need $7 for a Netflix subscription anytime, that's about as much as I can give, and I'm happy to hand it over. I'm not a totally bad virtual friend, but anyway, no, they're doing well. They're living well on all fronts. And I think that's never more evident than when we see them out and about. They look happy and in love. They look healthy and in love. They look like they have a great lifestyle. We've seen them in their garden and with their chickens and with their friends and family. And we don't need to be worried. Who we do need to be worried about is some other ones. But this is not the episode for that. We're going to celebrate Archie. But anyway, So that's why I kind of gave a little side eye to Hello with the luxury life, but they could just be wanting to, you know, point out that he lives a really fun life. So I'll reserve my attitude. But this article was written by Danielle Stacey, and she says, sleeping soundly in his father's arms, Prince Archie made his public debut 2 days after his birth with an overjoyed Duke and Duchess of Sussex describing being parents as magic. His appearance in St. George's Hall in Windsor Castle in May of 2019 marked a break from royal family tradition with no immediate photo call as his mom and dad expressed their wish for their son to grow up as a private citizen. Now, wait a minute. How are you going to start the birthday post off with all this? Archie didn't ask for all this. Let's get to the 5-year-old celebration and marking of his life. So let's keep going. He is settled at preschool with both Prince Harry and mom Meghan juggling the nursery run in between work commitments. Does this feel tenuous, like a little bit tense to y'all? This feels a little, okay, I'm gonna read 2 more paragraphs and let's see if we get the same. Cause this feels like she got a little something. This feels a little snarky. That's the word, she feels snarky. Danielle, you being snarky on the birthday. Let's see. The next few months, we'll see the red-haired youngster prepare to move to kindergarten. Oh, the first year of primary school. And according to Montecito resident, Richard Menards, there are plenty of fantastic schools to choose from. See, this is where y'all lose me. Why are y'all interviewing random people from their neighborhood who could just be jogging in the neighborhood? They might not even live there, about what schools. And see, this is where y'all get weird. And this is exactly why they got their asses in Montecito and not over there where y'all can poke and prod at them, because this is overstepping. Why are you interviewing random people trying to find out their schools? And before long, y'all going to be announcing what school the baby is at. Now, this is written again by Danielle Stacey, but I don't care for that. Let's see. A few official photos of Archie have been released, but the Sussexes shared a glimpse into family life in their 2022 Netflix docuseries, Harry and Meghan, from helping bake corrugate muffins to, I know I read that wrong, to tending to the chickens and walking their 3 dogs. He is living an idyllic childhood. Okay. All right. Quote, to have an outdoor space where I can go for walks with Archie and we go for walks as a family and with the dogs, you know, we go on hikes or go down to the beach, which is so close, Harry told U.S. chat show host Oprah Winfrey chat show. I forgot this, what y'all call it. The Duke and Duchess are also making sure that Archie understands that there are those less fortunate than him. A 2022 profile on Meghan in The Cut explained, quote, they are teaching Archie that some people live in big houses, some in small, and that some are in between homes. They made kits to pass out with water and peanut butter crackers and granola bars. Quote, I ate one, Archie contributes. Oh, I remember that article. Archie spent the first 6 months of his life at the Sussex's former home, Frogmore Cottage, on the Windsor estate, before experiencing his first snow in Canada during Harry and Meghan's 6-week break in Vancouver Island. At 5 months old, he charmed on the royal tour in South Africa, his only outing with his parents on an official engagement, and showed an early love for books, giggling as Meghan read Duck Rabbit on his first birthday in 2020. Quote, he loves being a big brother, his mom has said, and was seen helping Lilibet blow out her candles on her first birthday, which the family celebrated in the UK during Queen Elizabeth II's Platinum Jubilee celebrations in June of 2022. I know this isn't about that, but let's just take it back real quick. This is exactly what I mean by Harry and Meghan always making Queen Elizabeth a priority. When it was time for her Jubilee, they were happy to go back and even had Lilibet's birthday there so that they could be nearby. Beautiful. And that cake is beautiful. Archie and Lilibet are Harry and Meghan's priority. After attending the King's coronation, which coincided with his son's 4th birthday, the Duke quickly flew back to the U.S., as he should have. This year, Archie's big day comes ahead of Harry's return to London this week to mark the 10th anniversary of the Invictus Games. He said, before Meghan, who has partly Nigerian heritage. Okay. I understand why they brought it up, but like, come on, joins her husband in Nigeria later this month on Invictus Business after they were invited by the Nigerian government. So I guess the article wasn't too bad. It started off with a little tension. It's linked in the description box below. If y'all want to read it for yourself and get a gauge, let me know. Feel free. I mean, not let me know. Feel free to check it out and let me know what your thoughts are. But I'm always side-eyeing these little random correspondents. I really only trust like 2 correspondents, one of which is Omid Scobie, and the second one is Scobie Omid. So So like, if I don't see his name, I'm pretty much being like, this is not authentic or accurate. And maybe that's my bad. There are other royal correspondents like Stephanie Pettit who do pretty good work, but really the only one that I don't side eye is Omid Scobie. So who knows? Like, maybe I need to just expand like my trust, but I'm saying I don't trust any of them, just to be honest with you. But anyway, I wanted to leave us with this since I wanted to leave on a high note. Thank you guys so much for listening. I appreciate your support of the Sherry and Sade podcast. And before we get out of here, I just want to say happy birthday to Prince Archie. It is so fun being 5. You are a whole hand. And I hope you enjoy your birthday like I know you will. And for the rest of us, I want to leave you with this before we get out of here.
You got to find your way through.
Where are you?
I'm gonna find you. Dead end. This way. Come this way. Go this way. This way.
You know, when I look back at my own childhood, it was great. But I just remember feeling alone a lot.
Which way are you gonna go? Go, go, go.
I just wanted all these cousins and these people. I just wanted all of that. And I didn't have that big family.
It's so cool. He's done.
He got it. He got it. So when I was pregnant with Archie, I was just so excited that we were going to be able to create for him that thing that I had always wanted. It was a place where we had so many memories. From our courtship, our engagement, our wedding, our walks. And then where we ended up, you know, having our baby.
Oh, yay! Oh, yay! Buckingham Palace proudly announces the birth of a royal baby boy.
I want to start off by congratulating Duchess Meghan Markle and Prince Harry.
Very happy news. It is a boy. Just a few
hours. Meghan and myself had a baby boy early this morning. It's been the most amazing experience I could ever possibly imagine.
One of those babies is going to pop out looking like me.
As a black man who's just been born to royalty, the Black Prince, Archie has changed the game.
Meghan, can you tell us what's like becoming a new mum and tell us a little bit about baby Sussex, as we're calling him?
It's magic. It's pretty amazing. And I mean, I have the two best guys in the world, so I'm really happy.
And how are you finding parenting generally?
No, it's great. I mean, parenting is amazing. It's only been, what, 2.5 days, 3 days?
Yeah.
But we're just so thrilled to have our own little bundle of joy. You've already got a little bit of facial hair as well. Wonderful. Guys, thank you.
Thank you all so much.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And thank you, everybody, for all the well wishes and the kindness. Mm. It's really, it just means so much.
And suddenly, whatever I thought or felt, the formality just sort of slid, and I felt so at ease. They were really hands-on parents. In the morning when he woke up, first thing mom and dad would come in, they would be with their baby, she would feed him, and then after that, I'll take over and normally would go for a morning walk.
She said, is it okay if I like tie him on my back with a mud cloth like we do in Zimbabwe? Yes, let's do that.
She's legs like this, like hugging Laura like this, fast asleep.
It's true.
It was brilliant.
Early into the job, we have to prepare for a tour. I'm like, what do I pack for a small prince?
Please place items in the locker carefully.
It's always been a bit of a royal thing to go on a tour with your child. The South Africa tour, Archie being 4 months old, and off we went and we took him with us. And it was the first time that we sort of traveled as a family for official work. It was a real strange experience.
far from a traditional start to their royal tour, arriving in the Nyanga township, known as the murder capital of South Africa.
The symbolic place for the world's most talked about mixed race couple to make their entrance.
You have to see the royal family as diplomats representing the UK. And so there was great nervousness about how far Meghan could go in doing or saying anything that wouldn't cause national geopolitical rows between the two countries.
Maya Angelou once said, "Each time a woman stands up for herself, without knowing it, possibly without claiming it, she stands up for all women." While I'm here with my husband as a member of the royal family, I want you to know that for me, I am here with you as a mother, as a wife, as a woman of color, and as your sister.
Everybody, welcome back to the Sharian Shade